Hello, dear friends. We are sincerely glad to greet you again. Today we're going to talk to the esteemed Igor Mikhailovich Danilov.
Greetings.
Igor Mikhailovich, in our previous video, we emphasized that besides increasing God's love, it is also very important to study consciousness. And we said that studying consciousness is very important because this enables a person to go firmly along the spiritual path on two feet. One of which is respectively accumulation of God's love, and the other one is work on oneself and studying oneself. Studying oneself allows a person to understand that he is first of all not consciousness, as well as how shaitan manipulates him. And most importantly, when one understands who is who, it helps him to be stronger, more confident, and calmer on the spiritual path. Like you said in the previous video, the spiritual path is easy to traverse for every person. What makes the spiritual path difficult to traverse is precisely consciousness and those temptations which come to us from shaitan. That in fact, shaitan, the devil, or the system doesn't manifest any violence in order to lead us astray or for us to do evil. He only gives us the thoughts we choose. It is not shaitan who does evil, but it is people themselves who do evil both to themselves and to each other. Therefore, it is very important and crucial to understand who you are, and most importantly, to understand exactly what you choose each day, what thoughts you prioritize. Perhaps the most frequent question we've been asked regarding thoughts is the following: how to distinguish the thoughts that you choose as personality, those thoughts that are good for you and contribute to your spiritual development, from those thoughts that are imposed on you by consciousness, and as a result, shaitan or the demon takes you on a leash and leads you where he needs. So, here's the question: how to distinguish between thoughts chosen by personality and thoughts imposed by shaitan?
Actually, this is easy. There are thoughts that are positive for a person, and there are negative ones. Well, again, in order to sort this out, let's say those people who have no experience still need to work on themselves. Sit for a while and observe their thoughts, how they come. How they come during the day, I mean. By observing their own thoughts, the so-called their own, to really realize where thoughts come from, based on practical experience, how they arise, what exactly comes to a person in these thoughts, and what the consequences will be when a person accepts them. In other words, one should analyze, critically analyze, the incoming thoughts, especially intrusive ones. And let's say if people work on themselves even a little bit, if they really spend, for example, I don't know, at least 5 minutes, a couple of times a day, and if they try to observe during the day, at least try, although it's better to actually observe how thoughts come, how it all happens in a person himself, then I think that people will figure out on their own which thoughts are positive and which ones are negative very quickly. The only difference here is what goal a person himself has, you see, and that's where a lot depends on the goal. Why? If, for example, a person is busy with his work and his goal is, well, let's put it simply, to survive in this consumerist world, just to survive, the person has such a situation, he doesn't want to engage in spirituality, so to say, he simply wants to survive. The economic situation is difficult, there are a lot of different problems. Well, who hasn't got into such conditions or such moments of life? And the person has to solve a number of issues, sometimes quite difficult ones, in order to find a way out of a seemingly hopeless situation. But here, even in this case, it is very important to observe one's consciousness. Why, friends? Because precisely these kinds of situations occur due to the fact that we do not observe what comes to us from the outside. I mean, namely our ideas and thoughts, followed by our actions and deeds. We make a decision to take a step to the left or a step to the right. Well, the difference is huge. A simple example, we're walking down a path, okay? Let's imagine, there is a swamp and a path. A step to the left or a step to the right would definitely mean death. And we should walk straight and steady all the time. Is it important?
It is.
It is important. But when we are tempted, get distracted and forget that we are actually on the path of life now, and if we take a step to the side, it will be the last step for us. Is it important?
Of course, it's important.
Can we get distracted? We can. When we have walked for 5 or 10 minutes, we can still remain vigilant, but if we walk for the whole day, then besides the road, this path of life, we begin to observe nature. To get distracted, this becomes an ordinary and boring landscape for us. Naturally, we can reach for a bird, for a reed, or something else. Simply become lost in reverie and relax, and that's it, right? But who creates those conditions for us? Again, who and why has brought us into this swamp that we have found ourselves in such a difficult situation? If we analyze all this, our past thoughts, our actions, our mistakes, then yes, we will see those moments when we made a fatal mistake and didn't do something, or on the contrary, did something wrong. And now we've found ourselves in a swamp from which we should now look for a way out. But the point is that we won't be able to recall those thoughts that preceded our actions. That's true. So we subsequently miss these negative thoughts which create problems for us. Later on, we look for excuses for our actions, and when we find, let's say, that moment at which we did something wrong, how do we actually perceive it holistically, right? I mean, we don't see what Shaitan told us in our heads before that. While it is only Shaitan who could really lead us into problems when we give all our attention to trivial survival, when we have to think through every step in order to come out of those swamps onto the solid ground. So, if a person is immersed in the material world, there can be such a situation. Whereas if a person is on the spiritual path, this is completely different. In this case, the control of thoughts should be at a completely different level. Why? Because if in the consumerist format a person lives an ordinary earthly life full of problems without thinking about the spiritual, as everyone does, so to say, then thoughts are also simple. And the entire complexity is precisely in the process of survival or hoarding. Everything is very trite, simple, and very stereotypical. And if a person embarks on the spiritual path, in this case the situation is completely different. There is a mass of temptations, a mass of doubts and distractions. And here, one should already not just observe thoughts, but I would say, here one needs special practices in order to catch those thoughts when they haven't come in yet. I'll give you a simple example. For instance, you are busy with something. Whatever. Well, let's say, what can a person be busy with when concentrating? A person embroiders. This is relevant for women. As for men, a person takes apart some unnecessary engine, whatever. We are busy. We are turning a screwdriver or knitting with needles. We are focused on work. And at this point, a thought comes to us. We recall a person with whom we once had a conflict, or even there was no conflict, but we suddenly recall him in a negative way, and we feel how an emotion starts boiling up inside us. We no longer see that engine, we have already forgotten what we embroidered, right?
Yes, exactly, that captures us.
We already begin to argue in our mind to prove something. Some scenarios already arise for us, and here is an interesting point. Were we supposed to just catch that thought when we recall that person and not accept it? Or not let the emotion inside? That's a good question.
Yes, what comes first? What comes earlier? A picture or actually an emotion?
And here, let me create an even more tense situation. For example, you are in a tense situation. It doesn't matter which one, my friend. The situation is unimportant. Bandits approach you. Not bandits, okay, it's too straightforward. People approach you on the street and ask you, what time is it? They kind of look like hooligans do. Then they start asking you, why are you dressed like that? They are obviously picking on you, okay? At this moment, you make a decision that a fight cannot be avoided, so you hit them first. Question. What came first? A thought? You accepted the thought that you had to hit first, and then either to run away or to keep fighting. Such a tense moment. And do you know what the funniest thing is? That prior to the moment the thought came to you that you should hit now, or let's go back to our embroidery and engine repair. Up to the moment when you recalled that person, and when this thought came to you, my friend, which began to produce a chemical reaction, this very hormonal cocktail in your body, less than 3 seconds passed. That's where it becomes interesting, right? Then within another half a second, this information comes to you as personality from primary consciousness. Then it goes back already, with your approval, filled with the power to act. Meanwhile, the hormonal cocktail has already been formed, and at this moment, you either enter into a dialogue with the person in your imagination, or you are the first to hit a real person, so to say, so that you have at least a second to run away or to win, let's say, such a desperate situation. And that's where the whole essence of the work of our consciousness is hidden. When a thought comes to us as personality, we are aware of it, first of all, as personality, but after it has been perceived by primary consciousness, and 3 seconds pass before primary consciousness perceives it. Then we have another half a second for processing this thought in order to respond. And during this time, we feel such a rush of adrenaline or some other hormone, sort of a surge, or there are whole combinations of those hormones towards some action, a dialogue or a fight. And here's a question. If this is our thought, then why was our body already charged, yet we started thinking much later? Isn't this an obvious manipulation? Some people may say, that's the way our brain works. Wait, friends, does our brain work against us? That's one side. And the other side, how does our brain think? A simple question. After all, our neurons are very simple. And functionally, they're unable to think. The exchange processes that go on between neurons, those formations of new connections and so on, are a feeling of empty spots, so to speak. Let me give you a simple example. A dwarf, just imagine it. Let's imagine a dwarf, all of us. Imagine a dwarf in such a hat, such an interesting one, in a certain outfit, just like the picture which is imposed on us. And now, let's imagine a dwarf, well, let's say, in a Viking helmet. There is a delay, friends. Why? Because you first recall the Viking helmet, and then there was, you know,
matching
and forming, like in neural networks nowadays. And the most interesting thing is that our brain works much slower in this mode than a neural network, and much slower, in order to create this kind of creature in our head. Now, there is another question. After all, we saw the dwarf in our heads. We saw the helmet, and we saw the dwarf. At first, we just saw the dwarf. Then we saw the helmet, and then our consciousness, in the same way as a trivial neural network, shaped this dwarf for us. And do you know what the difference is? It is in shape, in clothes, in minor differences. If we begin to describe this dwarf, everyone will have their own. Why? Depending on what kind of picture one has in the head. Thus, we have now formed new interneuronal connections. Why? Because until this moment, we didn't have a dwarf in a Viking helmet in our heads, whereas now, we do have one. So the next time we need to recall it. It doesn't matter how many years or decades will pass. If we need to, our neural network will immediately reproduce this picture for us.
Already without such a delay.
Absolutely right. This is the point of the work of our brain neurons. Question: where is consciousness? There is no consciousness there. There is just a banal work of that very neural network. Well, it's a little bit different. I would say it is weaker than modern neural networks. It works longer. Why? Because the process of coordination between primary and secondary consciousness takes place. In this case, this is true. Plus, there is our memory unit. And our memory is, unfortunately, not stored in the brain. We have a different carrier for it. And this is where a lot of interesting things begin.
Also, our friends who follow the spiritual path have often told us that they encounter a situation when an emotion comes immediately and they feel that something is going on, but a picture, this thought, is not retrieved by primary consciousness.
I agree with you 100%, and I agree with them. A person is able to perceive this hormonal cocktail, to perceive an emotion, and only after that a thought comes.
With the delay.
So in this case, if a person asks himself, what's going on, what's happening to me? That is, if he turns to himself, starts analyzing and invests his attention in trying, let's say, to diagnose his body, what the cause was, before the thought comes, which is supposed to be the trigger.
To produce a reaction.
Yes, the trigger for our emotion. As a rule, this may even take up to a minute. I mean, there is a huge delay. As soon as we get distracted, we have broken that combination. You see, in other words, according to the plan of the system itself, or our consciousness, whatever is convenient to you, friends, we were supposed to generously feed our consciousness at that time. Meaning, we were supposed to transfer our vril, our power of attention, to our consciousness in a large amount. That is, to emote a great deal. A powerful emotional surge is created in us before the picture is even supposed to reach us. Let's say the information is only about to reach us as personality, but we've already felt it. The receptors have become active, especially when secondary consciousness works against us to evoke an emotion. Well, that's a more complex combination. And before transmitting it to primary consciousness so that it later transmits the emotion to us as personality, secondary consciousness forms a cocktail in our body. However, primary consciousness notices it all and immediately sounds the alarm. Why? Because it also wants to intercept. Without having that information, in fact, primary consciousness doesn't always have the information that is prepared for us by secondary consciousness and vice versa. I mean, despite the fact that they are close, there is a difference between them. Why? Because primary consciousness is the primary one, while secondary consciousness, this is quite serious, so to say, and it is formed later. There's a serious time gap, you see? We've already felt, we've already reacted, and only about a minute later a thought might come to us. But if we have delved into studying ourselves, then the thought might never come at all. Meaning, if we begin to associate it with something, with some past surge, or with some problem in the body, it may never come at all. So in this way, we have stolen, or rather not we, again, just look.
The primary one.
Seemingly it's a slip of a tongue, but that's our habitual way of thinking. We always put ourselves in the place of either primary or secondary consciousness, and we always say, this is actually us, this is me. But who is me? Are you actually consciousness, my friend? At this point, we also begin to enter a discussion which may continue for quite a long time, trying to figure out whether consciousness is us or not, especially if we talk to some modern representatives of psychiatry. It can be a lengthy and hilarious discussion. Why? Because the concept of self is so ambiguous nowadays, and it is interpreted differently by different schools, even by different branches in psychology, not to mention psychiatry. While in fact, everything is very simple. Who is the me? It is personality. So it is very important to understand that you, my friend, are not consciousness, neither primary nor secondary one. These are merely your tools, while you are personality. And here, willy-nilly, you have to work on yourself. You have to study, you have to observe. Well, you can choose not to do that. Then you can live like everyone else, let's say, without strain. People say, is it possible to come to God through love? It is possible. We already answered regarding this more than once. Of course it is possible. Any religion, in fact, leads to God. Why? Because every religion contains the grains of knowledge. And for a person who seeks and longs to come into Lord God's world, one grain is enough to take this truth, to grasp and comprehend it, because every grain is like each cell of our body. It carries in itself a holistic understanding. In other words, by casting away all the chaff and leaving one grain for himself, a person can really come to the spiritual world thanks to it. However, my friend, along the way you will definitely face manifestations of demons, devils or jinn, whatever we call them. You see, these are all epithets. They are really epithets. In various religions they are called differently, but the essence is one. Those are the closest enemies of a human. They are the real enemies of a human. It is our consciousness. Something with which we have become so knitted that nearly from our every initial conscious step since childhood and, as they say, to our last breath, to our last thought, sometimes we do not even know who we are. We remain slaves under the power of those two cheaters in our heads. And the funniest thing is that they are not even in our heads. Yet, I have to say that our brain is actually honest. It's just like your computer screen. Yes, there may be pixel glitches, there may be malfunctions, but it is
unbiased to choices.
Absolutely unbiased. That's for sure. And here's the question we started with. How can you distinguish, let's say,
where a choice is from personality and where it is imposed by consciousness?
Where it's a choice and where it is imposed. So the reason why I've been telling it for so long is to make it clear, friends, that it is very easy to distinguish this, in fact. If a thought is controlled by you as personality, if it's a positive thought, I mean for you, it may even be negative for someone else, but it is positive for you, then this thought can still be formed by consciousness and come from the system, but it will work for you and will help you. Whereas if it's a destructive thought and you accept it, this can certainly affect you. It can hinder you on the spiritual path. It can lead you astray and distract you. Well, just for you to understand, the fight is going on for the power of vril. If you understand the entire value of your attention, if you are able to identify yourself as personality, in the previous videos we already discussed many times how to understand oneself, how to find oneself, how to distinguish where the work of primary consciousness is, where the work of secondary consciousness is, and where we are as personality. Well, we will not repeat. If you want to, just watch the previous videos, right? That's for those who haven't seen them. So here, from the position of personality, in this case, by observing the work of consciousness, we can easily learn and understand what consciousness is and what a positive and a negative thought is for us as personality. One more point. I'll repeat, we talked about this. Our personality is unable to think. If we look at how our consciousness works, we can sit down, calm down, and simply direct our gaze into our head filled with thoughts. I'll put it this way. We will see that all thoughts are discrete. Even if we are very focused on something and are doing something, and here we go back to the engine repair, embroidery, or even meeting some not quite friendly people in the street, we will still have a lot of thoughts. We won't be able to focus 100% on that action. At this time, we will still have a mass of variations, various thoughts, and all of them will be fidgety and discrete. That is, they have no integrity. Yet, if we look at how personality perceives, this is for those who, let's say, the first experience of realizing oneself as personality is amazing. Do you know why? Because there is no thought. As personality for our process of of realizing some actions or situations, we use our consciousness anyway, while as personality we perceive any situation holistically. In other words, we immediately grasp cause and effect relations. We see the beginning and the end. We see where one or another action will lead to. There's an absolute picture. Moreover, we do not perceive it as an image. We perceive it as a fact, as knowledge. This, not thought, let's say, but understanding. Thought is what our consciousness produces. Here's another very interesting fact that you can trace, so to say, and it has actually been confirmed many times. A lot of research has been conducted on people who have mastered meditative practice and are able, let's say, to immerse themselves into the state, absolutely into the state of personality. That is, when the work of consciousness stops and there is only personality's activity. For example, the work of neurons in our brain can be clearly seen on that very emission tomography scanner. When a person enters such a special state, let's call it meditative, we see that neurons are almost completely damped, meaning there are no thoughts. It is akin to a very deep sleep. Such a phase of deep immersion when there is inhibition of the cerebral cortex, but at the same time, a humanist personality remains active. Yet this does not affect the work of the brain. The work of the brain is affected by the work of primary consciousness, that is, all the pictures and everything else. Well, and there may be a little, I emphasize, a very little influence of secondary consciousness. In other words, secondary consciousness directly affects the brain very rarely. Why? Because exactly through neurons, bypassing primary consciousness, it reaches us as personality. Well, oftentimes, this is a rare phenomenon anyway. Most often, secondary consciousness still uses primary consciousness to convey information to us. Yet, when this very disconnection or displacement takes place, we can see it all in practices of that very hypnotherapy, for example, or some kind of hypnotic tricks and the like, when primary consciousness is removed and an operator already works instead of it. Well, this is also such an interesting phenomenon, so to say. But we examined it once. In any case, the influence of hypnosis and how it all happens is not the topic of our today's meeting, although we already discussed it. So, the difference between the work of primary and secondary consciousnesses is actually huge, and it is extremely important for a person to balance them and to control them. I'll say even more, many of us have seen such a monad, yin-yang. There are sort of two little whales, a black one and a white one, with eyes. A black eye is on the white whale and the white one is on the black whale. This monad exactly embodies a balance between our two consciousnesses. Later on, of course, a lot of philosophy, explanations and interpretations of good and evil emerged. No, this is not the monad of good and evil. The monad of good and evil is a little bit different, but that's not the point. Yet there is one more interesting point. For instance, when a bad, destructive thought comes to you, okay? Yes, this cocktail has already been prepared in your body. Everything is already at the starting line. Only you, as personality, do not know about it, that now they will rob you, again, in the literal sense of the word. They will take away a huge part of vril, which you could spend on your spiritual development or on some positive matters for you personally. At this moment, you feel a certain tension, that there is something going on in your body, right? Primary consciousness has conveyed information to you about that. But there are no negative thoughts.
And no pictures.
And no pictures. And at this moment a thought comes, meaning you see a picture that is associated with something, and you realize that this association can have negative consequences if it is unfolded. If you have experience, and that's why it's important to study your consciousness and develop these skills. So when you have experience and understand that this picture is associatively connected with something, while you already have a bubbling cocktail inside you, you can do a very useful action for yourself as personality. That is, you can save a lot of energy, but also take away that energy which your consciousness or the system has spent, so to say. Meanwhile, your consciousness is merely a part of the system. There is actually not much power in consciousness. In order to attack you, it uses the power of the system. But after it takes the power of will from you, no matter how much it takes, it leaves only a tenth of it for itself. We talked about that. Meanwhile, a tribute of 90% it gives to the system itself. Well, it's almost like modern taxes, you know? So, in order to receive this power and to preserve and increase your own power, it is quite enough just to go deep into the state of spiritual peace, so to say, and to reject this inner turmoil, this thought at all, meaning to turn off this picture and redirect this excited state of your body, this very cocktail, to the state of peace inside yourself. You'll be surprised, but it feels like, well, I would say, you feel good. And suddenly, say, you're doing sports, there is a normal load, and then a second breath opens up, you know. It's like when you lift something heavy, and suddenly it becomes so much easier to lift. Why? Because it's like on rubber bands, right?
You received help.
As if something has helped you. The same is in this case. Well, we can associatively compare it with many things, but it's like a friend's help, so to say. Or to put it simply, you need money and suddenly you have it. You had once laid it aside and forgot, but now you have found it. Such a help from yourself.
Igor Mikhailovich, I'd like to emphasize that you have just voiced a way to squeeze out a mosquito.
Well, one of the ways.
One of the ways.
Yes.
This is a long-awaited gift for our viewers, because they have been asking for it for a long time.
In fact, yes, but here, you need to know how the system itself works. If you don't know that, my friend, you will have a hard time. And again, we shouldn't set any precedents. Why? Because, again, all these questions, you know, it's like walking on thin ice, I would say. In what sense? Let me give you a simple example. We have just told you, Tatiana emphasized, that this can be a method of squeezing a mosquito out. So you, my friend, without substantial experience of observing your consciousness, start catching this mosquito in order to squeeze it out. Do you know how much you'll spend on your training? This is extremely expensive indeed. Instead of studying consciousness, you may fall for the tricks of your own consciousness when it tells you, now you and I, my dear, will start squeezing out mosquitoes. And any thought that comes, we are now transferring it, or it will say, no, listen, what is going on in your body? Do you see? There's a niche in your left heel. That's already the cocktail being prepared. Now your consciousness is throwing bricks against you, or at you, you know, I mean, these are natural processes. What I'm voicing now, my friends, is the natural work of our consciousness. So we shouldn't fall for these tricks. Why? To satisfy the hunger of our consciousness, let alone the system as a whole, that's impossible. No matter how much power we are given as personalities, even if you give all of it to the system, and by the end of the day you remain, I don't know, like in the fairy tale that grandma remained with nothing by the broken trough, so do you by your body. Still, you won't satisfy and fill up the system, because it's an abyss, it has no bottom. No matter how much life we throw in there, it all goes into the dead. That's why you should preserve it, you should be watchful and vigilant about your real power. This power is needed for gaining life. So it is necessary to study consciousness, but you shouldn't play with such methods as we've just described, right? This skill will come by itself. Don't be in a hurry.
One shouldn't engage in raidership.
Absolutely right. Don't enter the territory of consciousness. Why? Because if you try to enter the territory of consciousness and defeat it on its territory, you should know that at that time, consciousness stages a theatrical performance for you, while in fact, You have paid for this performance, and you merely, as a spectator, in this case as personality, are sitting in the farthest corner of this theater and observing the stage. So, my friends, you should do everything gradually, correctly, and preferably without making mistakes, then this is more enjoyable.
And you shouldn't leave the territory of love.
And this is the most important thing, my friends. There is nothing more powerful than love. And there is nothing more desirable than God's love. Therefore, my friends, it is necessary to attain it, to accumulate it, and in order to have more God's love in this world, we have to create the conditions for that ourselves. Meanwhile, everything begins with a simple thing. Let's just love one another. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Igor Mikhailovich.
Thank you, friends. Peace be with you.